your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Welcome, everyone, to Redacted on this Thursday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores. We try to navigate through all of the propaganda that they're heaping on top of us on a regular basis. And boy, is there a lot of propaganda being pushed today about President Trump, about questions about the school shooting in Georgia, and family members coming forward, others who were there and eyewitnesses saying, wait a second, the official story that they're telling you on the news is not what we saw when we were there in person. So we're going to talk about all of that. And what did the FBI know about this shooter ahead of time? Let's see if it sounds familiar to other shootings that we've had across the United States.
Plus, law enforcement preparing for a possible Trump sentencing around the hush money trial. Is he actually going to go to jail or not? Is this election interference? Is this selective prosecution? Yes, it is. It absolutely is selective prosecution. We're going to talk about that. We have Lionel Nation joining us today, and I'm excited about it because he's one of my favorite legal analysts. Plus, does it matter, all of this family feuding around candidates? For instance, now Tim Walz's family coming out against him, Barack Obama's family coming out against him, Trump's family has notoriously been coming out against him. Do we care? Is this real news? Is this something to base your vote on? I want to go over this and just... we're going to discuss it collectively. Do you care what family members think of one another? And if you do, don't ask my sister about me.
No, it's pretty crazy. Also, is there a cover-up at the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control? In fact, yes, there is a massive cover-up at the CDC. And our guest that we have special joining us today on the show has uncovered massive fraud and cover-up. And it has to do with, well, we can't really talk about it just yet, but we will in a little bit. And for that, we're going to be moving over to our friends at Rumble to talk about it a little bit later in the show. But it is astonishing what he's uncovered, and it is going to piss a lot of people off. So we'll get there in a few moments. So good to see all of you guys on this Thursday. Nice to see everybody here. Before we get into today's show, I do want to tell you about our friends over at Lear, because right now, gold, of course, hitting all-time highs. Precious metals are an incredible way to protect your family for what's coming. We are about to see rate cuts. Yes, guys, in just a few short days, the Federal Reserve is about to launch a series of rate cuts, an era of rate cuts, as what they're calling it. So we will see the United States dollar on a downward trajectory. Is this the moment when the U.S. dollar officially dies? You know, it'll be a slow death, right? It'll be on the gurney for a while. But the U.S. dollar for a global hegemonic, hegemonic power could be near its end. I mean, Roman Empire sound familiar? So how do you protect your family? You know, we're big proponents of investing in real things like real estate, gold, silver, tangible assets that have been around for 5,000 years. And our friends at Lear Capital can help you get set up in doing that. They're an American company located in the United States of America. And you can order where you actually can get gold coins, silver coins shipped right to your house or stored offsite. It's totally up to you. You can also use an old self-direct or an old IRA and roll it over into a self-directed IRA if you'd like. And they will help you set that up very, very easily. They've done it actually for all of our children. It's very, very easy to do. So all of our children are actually invested in precious metals inside of their self-directed accounts. This is something that every American can do. Wall Street doesn't control it. You control your own self-directed IRA. So give them a call. Call their 800 number, 613-3557, 1-800-613-3557, or go to LearRedacted.com and learn how how you can start investing even just a little bit of the U.S. dollars you might have in an old savings account or something into precious metals and see if it's a fit for you. Talk to them. And again, see if it's a fit for you. Well, troubling inconsistencies with the official story that is coming out of the school shooting at Appalachee High School in Georgia. Now, the official story is that a single person, a 14-year-old student, Colt Gray, shot and killed 4 people and injured 9 others, allegedly. Allegedly, this is the official story. Of course, he will appear in court tomorrow. He is now in custody. But apparently the neighbors never saw this kid before, didn't even know who he was. Except for the morning of the shooting, he came out of nowhere.
First, the latest on the suspect. Within the last few hours, we received the first picture of 14-year-old Colt Gray. This is a yearbook photo that a parent shared with 11 Alive, picture taken 2 years ago when he was in middle school. Gray was booked overnight facing murder charges, and he will be tried as an adult. 11 Alive's Ariana Manise joining us now with what we know about his first court appearance, Ariana.
Cheryl, he'll make his first court appearance tomorrow morning at the Borough County Courthouse. Already investigators are combing through evidence in connection to Colt Gray. Now, 11 Alive, we went to his home yesterday, which is about 6 miles away from Appalachee High School, where we saw ATF investigators. They spent hours going in and out of his home. Now, we spoke to a neighbor who lives across the street from him, and she says she only would see his younger siblings and his dad and wasn't aware that he lived at the home until yesterday when she saw him waiting for the bus the first time.
Interesting. First time. Didn't know who this person was. Where have we heard this before? No one knows who this person is. Like this eagle-eyed neighbor? So this eagle-eyed neighbor who like notices everything reminds me of my grandmother who used to sit in her rocking chair and look out the window in Pennsylvania, and she knew everything. She knew every detail about the comings and goings of all the children in the neighborhood. This kid wasn't at school today. He was homesick. She knew everything. There's a guy across the street that used to mow the lawn with his shirt off. She called him Tarzan. My grandmother used to say Tarzan was out mowing his lawn today. She knew everything, just like this eagle-eyed neighbor. And stop me if you've heard this before. The FBI knew about this kid over a year ago, and they were watching him. Thanks to Into Thin Air for posting this neighbor, this eagle-eyed neighbor watch.
Here at the home where he lived with his father and 2 younger siblings, this house right here along Harrison Mill Road is only about 6 miles from Appalachee High School. Now, until today, the neighbor directly across the street never even knew a teenager lived at this home, only seeing his 2 younger siblings around, but never Colt Gray until this morning.
He had on jeans, a dark or black zip-up hoodie with the hood up, and a black backpack. I don't know. I just felt odd. So hours later, this starts unfolding. And then my grandson sends me a picture that's one of the students at Appalachee snapped of the shooter when he had his gun in his hand. And he said, Gigi, is this who you saw? And that was the boy.
This just hours ago, the FBI confirming Colt Gray was flagged by their National Threat Operations Center last year, accused of making online threats tied to shooting up a high school. The FBI says the Jackson County Sheriff's Office tracked those threats down to Colt Gray. They went to his home, spoke to his father and to Colt as well. Now, his father told them these were his hunting guns and that Colt never had unsupervised access to these guns. Colt also denying making those threats online.
Oh, so the neighbor didn't know anything, didn't see this person before, never seen this individual before. That's certainly curious. Where have we heard this before? So the FBI knew about this kid a year ago. Here's the FBI's press release. In May 2023, the FBI's National Threat Operations Center received several anonymous tips about online threats to commit a school shooting in an unidentified location and time. The online threats contained photographs of guns. Within 24 hours, the FBI determined the online post originated in Georgia. And then they went out to his house. They went to the possible subject's house, interviewed him, talked to the father, knew that he had hunting guns in the house. Okay. So they knew all about it. Now, of course, memes. I mean, again, as Libs of TikTok posted today, every single time, say the line, Bart, Bart wearing an FBI hat. The shooter was on our radar. Ah, once again. Over and over and over again. This is the case. And CIA whistleblower Tony Saruja posted on X, using GPS, the same dirtbag retired FBI special agent we've linked to other shooters was within 1,000 feet of this shooter's mobile devices 11 times in 14 months. That is not a coincidence. 11 times in 14 months, former FBI special agent at other shooting locations was within 1,000 feet of this shooter 11 times in 14 months. Sure, it's nothing. Sure, it's nothing. Why would a retired FBI special agent who was near other shooters also be within 1,000 feet of this shooter? Laura Loomer wonders as well. Have you noticed there's always a school shooting in a swing state or a caucus state right before an election? Every election year? Like clockwork? Just making an observation, she says. Meanwhile, multiple eyewitnesses say there was more than one shooter. Fox News spoke to a family member that confirmed more than one shooter. Possibly as many as four shooters from eyewitnesses. That's not me saying that. That's eyewitnesses saying that. Kids and teachers reporting gunfire going off nearly at the same time at complete opposite ends of the school. That's curious. The school is very large, and for gunfire to go off nearly at the same time for complete opposite end of the school, to navigate through the entire school to have that happen, I mean, maybe this kid was Barry Allen. The Flash could travel that quickly. Jumped into a wormhole. It's interesting. So do we discount eyewitness reports on a regular basis now? That's the thing that we do, like at the Trump assassination?
Yes.
We just ignore these?
Yeah.
Oh, all these people that are on camera, on film, talking to Fox News, talking to CBS, talking to ABC, talking to CNN. We saw someone on the water tower.
No, you didn't. Goodbye.
We didn't know you didn't. You're an idiot. So we discount that now. And we just swallow this hook, line, and sinker like this new narrative. Okay. Maybe it's just this kid. Well, his family is furious today. His aunt posting all over Facebook. The family is up in arms saying that their nephew should not have to deal with this at all. What's going on here? I guess we'll find out tomorrow in court, maybe, at his prelim hearing. The school is very large, so for gunfire to go off nearly at the same time from complete opposite ends of the school makes it difficult to believe that one shooter was there. But we hope we get answers on that. We'd love to have transparency on that. The FBI also making us aware that the school received a phone call this morning that warned about shootings. Okay, so the high school at the center of today's mass shooting in Georgia received an earlier phone threat, multiple law enforcement officials tell CNN. The FBI posted this. Law enforcement officials in Georgia say Appalachian High School received a phone call this morning warning that there would be shootings at five schools and that the school and that the Appalachian school would be first. So you receive this information and then you have school that day?
And you didn't lock down? You didn't put extra security? It's interesting.
So it's not known who placed the call. Officials tell CNN they are investigating that and they're looking into that. That'll be nice. So first, we now know the school received a phone call before the school shooting started saying that there would be shootings at the school and five other schools. And then a few hours later, the school is attacked. I also found this nugget very interesting. I spent quite a bit of time on the school's website today digging through past posts and found this little gem posted in 2021. The school received multiple threats. And they posted this, responding to school threats. This semester, we've dealt with several unfounded threats at our school, and we want to share additional information with our parents so we are collectively informed and prepared moving forward. We do not want our children fearing coming to school. Of course not. So, based on our investigations, these threats fall into two categories. Social media posts. These threats are frequently posted on social media with a vague message of violence at school. Often these posts were generated somewhere else, often from another state. Huh, interesting. And then number two, to disrupt a learning. Students have realized that threats to the school safety disrupt learning. Some students have made threats with hopes of getting a test rescheduled or of not going to school that day. So they know this. Okay. So they posted this. So there's been multiple threats at this school. And they're telling parents, don't worry about it, basically. you know, these are just vague online threats. Don't worry about it. We don't want, you know, we want your kids to come to school. And we think that's mostly just kids trying to get out of taking tests. Okay. But on the morning, so then is this a crying wolf moment? So then you get a call from the, from someone who warns that there's going to be a shooting that day at the school. We're going to hit multiple schools, up to five schools, and your school will be first. Just ignore it. It's another just vague threat. Now, four people are dead, nine injured, two students, two teachers. Sources in Georgia sent us this fundraising email. Thank you to this source for sending this. If you're watching, thank you. This was sent out within minutes of the shooting from Democrats trying to raise money for Democrats, blaming Republicans for the shooting. This was sent out as an email. Republican Mike Collins has blood on his hands. The deaths in Barrow County are a direct result of his support for weapons of war. He's hiding behind the Second Amendment. He must be defeated. He's our number one target in Georgia. Help send a message now. Donate to defeat him. Donate to restrict weapon sales. Donate for common sense gun reform. Donate to remove guns from the hands of violent white male killers. Okay. We need red flag laws in Georgia, and Mike Collins stands in the way. Okay. So you can unpack that all you want. Like, restrict weapon sales to a hunter, to a father who owned hunting rifles. And if that is, in fact, the only person involved in this shooting, or at all, we don't know. So we'll see more at court tomorrow. But we have a lot of questions. And I think when you have all of these eyewitnesses coming forward, discounting the official narrative that they're trying to foist on you right away, we should question that. We should question everything. And that's what we try to do here on the show. We've got more news coming up here on this Thursday.
Yes, we're going to talk about whether or not the National Guard has been called in fact, arrest Donald Trump. Take him to prison? Is that what they're doing in and around New York City? We know they're not there because there is a migrant crisis and 75% of all arrests have to do with migrants. It's not for that, right? No, it's the criminal Donald Trump who's really coming to get you. Is that what's going on?
Or to keep unrest in the city, right? I mean, like, they're worried. They're bringing in hundreds of National Guard for what? Is there going to be massive unrest because he will be sentenced?
Right. And so he has, in fact, made an appeal to delay that sentencing. We're going to talk to Lionel Nation, one of our favorite legal analysts, coming up here to figure out, is Trump going to jail? Is this a part of the election cycle right now? What, in fact, is going on? We're also going to talk about all this family feuding around politicians. Is this something you're going to base your vote on? Do you care about this? What is it? Is this just family grifters to be expected? But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at American Financing, because if you are stressed about your monthly income because inflation is out of control and you just feel like you can't cover your bills, you're definitely not alone. Most Americans feel this way. Everything is so expensive. And this morning in the newsletter, we covered how jobs report is just terrible. It seems like the Fed is going to decrease interest rates, which will make inflation worse. So it's a band-aid on what should be a stitch wound. It's not great right now. But if you have assets to leverage, such as your home, American Financing can teach you how to do that. They have salary-based consultants that will look at what liabilities you've got versus what assets and teach you whether or not you can leverage that. This is something that wealthy people know. It's one of the main tenets of the best-selling book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, is leverage what you've got. Free up your income in order to build wealth, not live by liabilities. So you can call them, and they have been saving their customers an average of $800 a month. Waiting is just not an option. And if you call today, you could save yourself by delaying two mortgage payments and just give yourself some breathing room. So again, this is just something that we are asking you to learn, if it can help you and your family, and they will teach you. You can call them at 866-890-8434, or you can visit them at AmericanFinancing.net/redacted. One more time, that's AmericanFinancing.net/redacted. President Trump's legal team is trying to delay his sentencing for the hush money trial from New York. But in New York, authorities are already preparing for a possible Trump imprisonment, as in he would go to jail in the coming days in the heat of the election. Sentencing is supposed to happen on September 18th, but Trump's legal team is asking for a delay from the Second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals when a U.S. district judge already rejected this on Tuesday. So we invited legal analyst Lionel from the Lionel Nation YouTube channel. He's a former prosecutor who can help us break this down. Lionel, it's always a pleasure to have you with us. Trump in prison before the election. How could this happen?
It's not.
No, you're saying no.
He will never see a jail cell ever. But let's go through this and pretend that he's not President Trump.
Okay.
September the 16th, there is going to be a motion in which Judge Mershon, who is the state, remember the state, New York State court judge, and the, as you say, hush money. It's not hush money. Nobody can even explain what this is. And I'm not exaggerating. I really can't tell you what exactly he was found guilty of in terms of 34 counts. But that's
you've maybe been on this show many times and said this is the thinnest legal case that he's facing, but the most imminent. We've been over this, so I want to refer our viewers to your analysis of this in the previous months.
Right. Well, it is a case, not to belabor the point, but it is a case where, first of all, hush money is an NDA. If you've ever been in, and most people who have been in media will tell you they've signed a non-disclosure agreement, non-disparagement. We'll pay you, leave, don't say anything bad about us. We won't say anything bad about you. That's an NDA. It happens all the time. There's nothing illegal or improper about asking somebody not to say something. There are reasons why, for example, you might, when you are for office, you might want to take care of some things. For example, let's say you're there's a divorce or child support pending, and you think to yourself, you know, it might be a good idea for me to kind of square that away before I run for office. Okay, I'll pay my ex, or we'll do something to facilitate that. It's done all the time. If I do anything to improve my standing, my appearance, up to and including surgery. So anyway, there's nothing wrong with it. They're alleging that what he did was he mislabeled a payment that was actually not really a legal payment to Stormy Daniels, but was actually a something that benefited his campaign, all to somehow subvert or defraud the voters based upon a federal law, which a state court does not have any jurisdiction to do. Normally, this would have been a misdemeanor. It becomes a felony when you do it to conceal another crime. That other crime was a federal crime, which Alvin Bragg, the DA, has no jurisdiction over. And if that makes any sense to you, congratulations. You're the one. So in any event, he's been found guilty of 34. Now, September the 16th, there was going to be a motion, which, by the way, Alvin Bragg, the DA, has said, I don't mind if you postpone this. He's kind of signaling, look, judge, you do whatever you want. We're really in no hurry here, which is kind of odd. Most assuredly, Judge Juan Mershon is himself going to say, forget it. Let's proceed. I want to be the judge that found him guilty, that convicted him. And if I sentence him to an hour of prison or jail, if it's less than a year, I realize that's going to be postponed and stayed by virtue of appeals, immediate appeals. So he will never see any jail cell, at least until after the election. But he wants to be, people believe, he wants to be the judge who said, I did it. And to give Kamala Harris the ability to say, he is a convicted felon, prison bound. And they, of course, can extrapolate all of that. He is not going to see, that's never going to happen. Because it can't, by virtue of the fact that he's a president, there's Secret Service, and no first-time offender ever would be looking at any significant time, especially a first-time offender, not a violent offense. So that's a waste of time. But let's make it even more complicated. You've got state court. You've got federal. You've got the Supreme Court. You've got the he just tried to file an appeal to a federal district court to see if they would, if he could remove the case to federal. They said, no, you're not going to do that. That's subject to appeal now to the second Circuit Court of Appeals. Then you also have the notion of immunity. The immunity case really is interesting because you have to go through each, this really gums up the works. You have to go through each particular instance of alleged wrongdoing and ask yourself, did he or did he not do any of this within the confines of the presidency? Did he confer with his staff? Did he confer with the Department of Justice? That could take forever just to go through that here, not to mention his other cases in federal court. So that's going to gum up the works. Then you have appeals maybe within those intermediary steps. Let's say, for example, on the 16th, Judge Mershon, which we believe, will deny his motion to dismiss or whatever it is based upon whatever the reasons. Now, does President Trump have the right to appeal that? Yes. State court, federal court. Court of Appeals? I don't know. People are saying, oh, the New York, it's very odd. The New York Court of Appeals is the New York Supreme Court for state court. The trial court is called the Supreme Court. Just to make this as complicated as you possibly can. If anybody has any feeling of being comfortable with the New York Court of Appeals, look what they did recently in the Harvey Weinstein case, which I think was just horrid. So to wrap it all up and to perorate, he's not going to go to any kind of jail. He very well could be on the 18th sentenced to jail, which would immediately be stayed pending an appeal. That's almost guaranteed.
Now, okay, but there's several things here that we have been over many times. One is that you said that he was, and this is what is in the court filings, is that they claim that he used money to conceal a crime, but they never told him what the crime would be throughout the trial. So his lawyers can argue a very serious Sixth Amendment violation because you have the right to know what you are being tried for. So he continues to run this up the flagpole that we should want every American to have access to. And they continue to sort of say, no, we can do this to you. This is just our right to do this to you. So you mentioned, you started a thought and I interrupted you, that if this were anyone else but Trump, it may go this way. Well, we saw Hillary Clinton use campaign money for the Steele dossier and funnel it through legal. So, okay, let's play this out. If this were Hillary Clinton, what would be happening? Oh,
she wouldn't be here, first of all. It would be deferred.
She's not here, first of all. She right, should be right. If Trump is.
Well, yes, she should. If somebody were to have charged her with that, or if somebody were to have found that to be problematic. It's just like with Hunter Biden. Just like with him.
Yes. Right.
Why is this? I can't imagine why he's not under the prison. There are multiple layers of justice, I'm sorry to tell you. I'll go back a step further. I will never understand how during the course of all of that investigation, when the FISA court would actually base warrants on articles written and stories concocted by the memoirs and the like. I mean, that's another story. That's another story.
Right.
Again, if it's Trump, it's completely different. Let's assume this were you. I would go into, first of all, it would never be charged. It would never be charged. They would say, if Alvin Bragg would say, do you have any idea of how many cases I've got in New York? I do not have unlimited resources. I do not have unlimited assistant district attorneys. I've got crime. I really have some very, very serious stuff right now. This is bookkeeping at best. Look, let's do a couple of things here. Let's do a deferred prosecution. You tell Natalie, you promised to be good, and we'll just drop this, or I'll plead to a misdemeanor. In fact, I would have suggested that Trump would have very would have reasonably said, okay, I'll plead to a misdemeanor. I mean, it's kind of a pro forma thing, but no. They wanted
convicted felon. Or during the Chris Christie years, perhaps a large fine, yes, and you go on your way.
Right, exactly. This is one of the things which is the most problematic, and let's be really corny here. Equal justice under the law. Equal justice, equal treatment, equal. What we are seeing here is unbelievable. I mean, think about this one. Now, of the cases so far, most of them have pretty much been sidelined. The Mar-a-Lago case, Jack Smith, who is relentless, who files a superseding indictment to clarify the immunity cases in something where they're actually trying to suggest that President Trump was somehow responsible for January 6th or something. That one, I don't think we'll ever see the day because nobody really understands it. It's just too tenuous. The case that would have really been something would have been, believe it or not, the documents case, because that's pretty cut and dry. That's really cut and dry. Do you have that? Did you not have that? That's gone bye-bye as well. And let me throw this in as well, because this is also another one which we forget about. The Georgia racketeering case. That's exceedingly serious. That thing's also gone bye-bye for a variety of reasons as well. What this man has been through, whether you like President Trump or not, it's just ungodly. If this was a poor, uneducated black defendant, people would be marching. They would say, "You can't do this. You cannot exact this amount of juridical a punishment against someone. What is it that you want?" Now, believe it or not, I know you might laugh at this. A lot of people who are prosecutors say, "I don't want to look to make it look too obvious." Even during the case of John Gotti and others, they have to sort of be able to pass the sniff test. You know, they have to, and especially Judge Mershon, who I would think would probably say, you know, if I want to go on to be maybe a federal judge or maybe a state court of appeal judge, I've got to maintain my judicial integrity. And I'm not suggesting that what he's doing has violated that. But this absolute overzealous attack. And let me also tell you, Natalie, and I'm not exaggerating the point. If you ask anybody to really sit down and explain not what Mershon says or what Alvin Bragg says, but explain to a layman what Trump actually did and what crime he was hiding and how a state prosecutor can use a federal crime, it would be like you in the state of New York charging somebody for violating a Georgia law. They would say, you can't do that. Same thing goes for federal. So as you can see, I think I've just complicated this even more. He's not going to step foot in any prison ever. Let me also throw in something. There are some contempt charges out there that, believe it or not, may carry more weight than anything else. It was suggested to me by someone in the know that something that might not be too far-fetched, him being sentenced, believe it or not, to contempt. And that can take the form of actually showing up, believe it or not, showing up to a courthouse, checking in for 8 hours, 2 days, and leaving. Something that seems almost like staying after school, but in view of his particular security considerations, that might be something that's in the offing. Don't be surprised. But the Democrats must say that he is a convicted felon and that he was at least sentenced to prison, even though he may not physically actually ever see a prison itself.
Okay. Okay. So something that you had said.
Your expression says it all.
Well, yes, because hear me out on this. Something you had said when we spoke about this before was you can't unring that bell. So they right. can put this stink on him and it cannot come off for certain voter populations, which would lead to irreparable harm to the election. What I'm struggling with is who could be punished for that so that it doesn't happen again? Certainly, if Trump were to take office, he can't circle back around and make sure that those people are punished, because that would be wrong too. So it seems to me that there are certain people in power who will get away with selective prosecution.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm mad about it.
Well, let me do it this way. If I represented them, I would say they've done nothing that is illegal. It might be improper. It might be politically ill-advised. But every charge they filed satisfied motions to dismiss, appellate review, many, many courts looked at it and they said, there's nothing wrong with this. Even though nobody might have been ever charged with this, at this level, prosecutions are always discretionary, depending upon who you are, and there always are political considerations as well. Your point is well taken, though. The average citizen says, if President Trump was treated worse than anyone else, if anybody is treated worse than anyone else, what repercussions do they have? What form of review do they have? How does one unring the bell? How does somebody disabuse themselves of this unfairness? And I will tell you, stand in line. There are people throughout history where you are going to ask yourself, why in the name of God? We could spend forever doing this. But here is the thing. Now, from a political point of view, as you and I know, Trump lives in a different inertial world. He's in a different universe.
State of
his
being,
up is
right?
Down.
Yeah.
Yeah. His gravity doesn't work. Every time he gets arrested, remember when they said, they can't take a mugshot of him? He's a former president. Well, the mugshot became his, he loved it. It was his red badge of courage. Everything, yeah. Every time he was arrested or convicted of something, his poll numbers went up, his fundraising went up. Doesn't make any sense. None of it makes any sense. Any of this. So his counter to that is, because he lives in this unique world, what would be normally just deleterious to you and me, to him somehow, I hate to be Nietzsche-esque, but makes him stronger, makes him more popular.
Okay. I mean, I understand that that is the phenomenon, but it doesn't make me feel better about the abuse of the law.
Oh, it shouldn't.
Okay. So that's where we're going to have to leave it, because, and it just leaves me with a bile in my, I don't know. All right. Well, I understand what you're saying and I don't like it, but I like your analysis anyway. And you're the only person I want to talk to about it.
Let me leave you one thing just to show you. And it goes back to the whole notion of equal justice under the law. The idea that we're supposed to be treated. Imagine going back to Hunter Biden. Imagine if that had been Donald Trump Jr. Everything that Hunter did, everything he did, cocaine in the White House, whether that was his or not, Donald Trump Jr. would have been in Leavenworth. It would have been the worst thing. When you see people treated differently because of who they are, because of their race, because of where they live, because of their money, that's the part that is in essence what this is. Treat Donald Trump the way you would treat anybody else.
In fact, in the last hour, the breaking news is that Hunter Biden is actually going to plea now, and he's going to change his not-guilty plea to a plea because he no longer has the protection of whoever the heck is in power right now.
But he also, remember, he theoretically, if hard for me to say this, if Kamala Harris were to be elected, she could always pardon him later on. We always knew it was going to be a plea. There was no defense. He had no defense. They were going to run this out as far as possible. And thank God for that one particular judge who noticed what they were doing, because they were doing this omnibus plea that would have taken care of everything. She said, no, wait. Bless her heart, as we say in the South. This is so incredibly unfair, every bit of it. And that is something that I find to be, as you say, so awful. Look, if Trump did something wrong, fine. That's okay. Treat him, but be fair. Be able to at least explain it. But yet, there are people, as you know, Natalie, who hate him either because of TDS or whatever the affliction. They hate him so much that even if you were to execute him, they would want him to be exhumed, brought back to life, and executed again. There is no amount of punishment or a pain exacted upon him that some people are satisfied with. They are just, I've never seen it. For every bit of love, for this inordinate amount of love, there is also this concomitant inordinate hatred that maybe counterbalances it. I hope we never see this again.
Yeah, it's upsetting. Okay. Well, thank you for your analysis. I want to tell our viewers to follow Lionel Nation on YouTube for more of this, because at least it makes sense of whether the law is being used or not used. So thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Lionel.
Thank you.
All right. I realized that we had something with my microphone.
We fixed it. Yeah,
and we seem to have fixed it in between.
Does it sound better now?
Yeah, I apologize if that was tinny, but Lionel sounded great, and it was him that you really needed to hear, not me. So hopefully you got value out of that segment still.
Unfortunately, like what I listen to is a very clean copy, so I don't actually listen to what's going out because I would be trying to switch the show on a delay, and you can't do that.
Yeah.
Right. So
hopefully it sounds better now. We just fixed it. I think we just fixed it.
Apologize.
Does she sound better now?
Check one. Check two.
Yeah, it was just her volume. Checking the mic. Low.
Yeah. And if I need to cut her mic at any time, try talking now.
Sometimes he does that, and I'm going to keep on going.
That's going to keep muting you.
Yeah. Okay. That's rude. What's going to happen to Kamala Harris at the next debate?
I can do that too. I have buttons that I can shut everything off.
Okay.
That end show button.
I will piss you off then.
Don't do that. We've got more news to get to here on your Thursday. We've got a very busy show. So thank you. First of all, I should say thanks to all of our new subscribers. We had a few thousand new subscribers to the channel overnight. So thank you guys. I always want to welcome all the new folks who are joining us here. We have no agenda. We're not paid by Big Pharma. We're not paid by Russia. We're not paid by anybody. We have a few sponsors here on the show. So thank you for your support and by viewers like you who subscribe for free and any sort of super chats, anything like that. And also we have a Plus Club too. So anyway, thank you guys for your support. Thank you for subscribing to the channel. We really appreciate it. Coming up, we're going to talk about, you know, almost the entire Tim Walz family has come out now and said they're voting for President Trump. Like, what the hell's going on? And then you have former President Barack Obama's brother coming out saying he's supporting President Trump. Like, what is with all this family? Remember the Kennedys, of course? All the Kennedy family came out and said they can't believe that Robert F. Kennedy, what he's saying, they're definitely going to support Biden at the time. So we're going to talk about these family feuds and what's really behind them coming up. Plus, we're going to talk about the cover-up at the CDC. We have a special guest who's uncovered some absolutely damning data. It's criminal, frankly, and we're not going to be able to do it here on this platform. We will have to end the stream at that point and go over to our friends at Rumble. So we have a Rumble channel. Almost nearly 600,000 of you guys are subscribed over there. So please come over there at that point. We'll give you a warning. Don't worry about it. We'll have to end the stream here because we won't be able to talk about some of those things right here on this channel. It would violate their terms of service, and we don't want to do that. We want to try to reach as many people as we can, but we can't do that story here. So we'll get to all of that. But first,
we want to tell you about our show sponsor, which is Hillsdale College. Now, you know that one of the things we value here on Redacted is being well studied, to study to the best of our ability in order to provide context to the world that we live in. History, economics, the great works of literature. If you didn't study those things in school, then maybe now is a time to give yourself a refresher course, because you know, scrolling through the internet is not deep study, but you can, in fact, either take a class or decide how you want to further educate yourself with Hillsdale College. They are offering more than 40 free online courses in the most important and enduring subjects. You can learn about the works of C.S. Lewis or stories from the Book of Genesis or the meaning of the U.S. Constitution, which is being constantly tested in this day and age. The rise and fall of the Roman Republic also seems fairly relevant in our day. So a lot of these are free, and we want to recommend that you go through the program and see what might work for you. What is it that you'd like to be more educated about in order to better navigate the society that we're living in right now? So right now you can go to hillsdale.edu/redacted to start, and it's free and easy to get started. Once again, it's hillsdale.edu/redacted, and these are self-paced courses. So So you can start whenever and wherever you are. Maybe use it, you know, a little bit at a time for your busy schedule. So check it out. See what might work for you at hillsdale.edu/redacted. Well, here's a thought piece, and I really do want to know what you think about this, because I'm torn on this one. Is it fair game for politicians' family members to speak out against them, or is this a game of airing your dirty laundry? Does this feel like something like, ooh, I feel like I shouldn't know this. This is inside baseball. This is your family, not for me to see. A little how I feel like when people read their own wedding vows in front of me that they wrote, like, this is for you. This is not for me. I shouldn't see this. But maybe that's just me. I'm a little uncomfortable with that type of intimacy. Or is this maybe a violation of Casa Nostra? You know what I mean? The mafia, like, you don't talk. So let me know what you think about it, because this image has gone viral of 8 members of Governor Tim Walz's family expressing their support for Donald Trump. See, they're all wearing a T-shirt, like a Disney World family T-shirt, but they say Walz for Trump. In fact, his older brother, Jeff Walz, who lives in Florida, says his brother is not the type of character you'd want in the White House. And in fact, we've done segments about what his character is. It doesn't seem the most honest of sorts. He says he has stories to tell and he could tell them. In a similar vein, Malik Obama is trending also because the former President Obama's half-brother says that he also will vote for Donald Trump, although this will be his third time because he backed Trump in 2016 and in 2020 in the previous two elections. Now, he said his brother was all out for himself during his administration. That's his big problem with his brother. You could say that. I mean, he bombed the holy hell out of the Middle East. So that's my main problem with him. It's not personal. So that doesn't really sway me about the Obamas, but they had other family feuds about a charity that led to their falling out. Now, when Robert F. Kennedy Jr., RFK Jr., endorsed Donald Trump just a few days ago, the Kennedy family released this statement against him, saying that his endorsement was a betrayal of the values that our father and our family hold most dear. Now, that kind of hits me wrong, because no family has a monopoly on a line of thought. Like, I don't get to decide how my kids feel politically. That's not for me. You can't just say all Kennedys represent this. It just feels dirty. And then, of course, you know, President Trump's niece, Mary L. Trump, was one of the first to do this and very beloved by the mainstream media for her memoir, Too Much and Never Enough. In fact, it was a New York Times bestseller, and Amazon, take a look here, has it marked as a Goodreads choice. They love it so much. They love dirt on Trump. I mean, I meant to bring this, but I didn't. But think about how they cover this as like, oh, you need to know that Trump is a dirty guy, not a good guy. But then when you look at how they treat memoirs such as Tara Reid, her memoir about being abused by Joe Biden, that book is suppressed at every turn. What were you going to say, David?
I was going to say what also frustrated me is the fact that they brought Bobby and John into that conversation and said that they would be doing the same thing. But if you look at what the Democratic Party is standing for right now, even John and Bobby would have been vehemently against the suppression of free speech and the things that they're doing on that that side.
And war.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
War.
Yeah. Vehemently anti-war.
It would seem, right? But I don't think anybody has the monopoly on somebody's memory, right? And so you can't say that someone interpreted it right or wrong. Those people are not here to speak for themselves. We each get our own interpretation. You can't say one is wrong or one is right. And in fact, Mary Trump has a new memoir coming out within the next few days on this anti-Trump rhetoric that she has. I want to say it's a grifting. This is her new book coming out in September called Who Could Ever Love You? It's about her father, Freddie Trump. He was the oldest son of Fred and Linda, President Trump's parents. And the summary says, because I haven't read it, that Fred Sr. was such a tyrant and her father, Freddie, was too sensitive and kind. And that contempt led to his alcoholism. So what she's implying is that this is the Trump way. They're tyrannical, win at any cost. Well, President Trump recently spoke out about his brother, Freddie, on a podcast, and he did confess that his brother's alcoholism inspired him to never drink.
I had a great brother who taught me a lesson. Don't drink. Don't drink. And he said, don't smoke. He smoked and he drank. And he was a great guy. He was a handsome, very handsome guy.
Is he older? He was older?
Quite a bit older, yeah. And he would, he had a problem with alcohol and smoke a lot. But, you know, I tell people, no drugs, no drinking, no cigarettes.
Yeah.
I tell that to my kids all the time. I'd say, no drugs, no drinking, no smoke. And
it was tough.
He had, well, he'd always tell me, he'd say, never. So he was, you know, really old enough that you would look up to somebody. And I'd look up to him anyway.
Did you admire him?
Yeah, I admired a lot, so much about him. He had so much going. He had the look.
What was his name?
Unbelievable personality, like an incredible personality.
What was his name, Donald?
His name was Fred Trump. And he had a problem with alcohol. He got addicted to it.
All right, so she has her memory of it. He has his memory of it. It's fair. Everybody gets their own memory of their family. They get their own take. She coped one way, but she is selling books on the back of his success. Who in the world would care about her story without it being connected to Donald Trump? So I want to put this to you. Are these things relevant for voters? Is this something voters should consider? Because certainly you could ask several members of my family who might say, oh, you know, Natalie, she's obnoxious. Right, Clayton? Nobody would say that about me.
Exactly. I mean, oh, sorry, I wasn't. Never.
Everybody has a family member who is willing to speak out about somebody, right? And so is this something that, the press thinks, oh, you need to know this. You should use this to influence your vote. So are these people grifters or is this relevant? What do you think? What do you think?
I think they're absolutely grifting off of it. I mean, it's like the wash that comes out from behind, behind a boat, you know, it's a clearly they're riding this wave and trying to make money off of it. Mm-hmm. And of course, so many members of Congress too. Yeah, exactly. Philip, opportunistic, right? Yeah. So it seems every election cycle, Mary Trump has a book coming out.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
I was going to say, are you allowed to write more than one memoir? Isn't that like, that seems like, I thought
part
you
one
got
and
a
part
memoir
two
in your life. Yeah. Like, isn't that sort of like an autobiography? Like, you can't keep writing autobiographies. Yeah.
Oh, I forgot this part.
Yeah. Oh, wait, one more thing, guys. Just one more thing.
He's going to run again? I have more to say. That's what it feels like to me. And she will get another paycheck, and she will absolutely get another interview with Rachel Maddow, more time on CNN in order to sell this book. So, yeah. Absolutely.
She'll make hundreds of thousands of dollars off of this book.
Right.
Absolutely. She probably got paid handsomely by some liberal publishing company. Do we know who published
it?
So she probably got
Premier
an advance.
Premier Collective is where I found it. I'm not sure if that's a publisher or not.
So I'd be curious, if she gets, you know, some sort of a payment up front from this sort of probably a liberal publishing company.
Right.
I mean, I can't imagine that it's not a liberal publishing company that's trying to publish this. Then they're going to push her out on all of the networks.
Yes.
They're going to push her out on all the liberal networks, MSNBC, NBC. They'll put her out on, you know, CBS Sunday morning. They'll do an interview with her. 60 Minutes will probably do a sit down with her and push the book as well.
Is there a foreword in it by Rachel Maddow by chance? Just
probably.
It would seem. I just wonder who out there, and I know, you know, there are people who make their voting decisions on much more vapid things, such as whether or not Ariana Grande supports Kamala Harris, which she does. But, you know, is anybody like, well, even his own brother doesn't like him, so I'm not going to, you know, vote for Tim Walz or something like that. And is it is there anything here that we need to see as voters? Or again, is this like people who write their own marriage vows and make us sit through that? You can tell how I feel.
I think there's something there. Maybe I'm sort of in the middle on this. It's sort of like, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, though. And, you know, like, listen to Mary Trump. I mean, just information is power. Like, listen to what she has to say. I did years ago. I was curious what she had to say.
Yeah.
But I didn't sway my opinion in any way, but I just, you know, information is power. We should not be censoring information. So now that the Walls family, the entire Walls family says, I've got stories that will make your, you know, hair on the back of your neck stand up about Tim Walls. Like, I'd like to know that information.
Okay.
I'd like to know what the family has to say about it. You know, in the same way that I would like to know what the Kennedys have to, I want to know all of it. And you make your own decisions once we have that information.
I don't know. I feel like it's mind my own business. I'm just going to vote based on basically the warring industrial complex.
I don't know.
Whether or not people have family members that don't like them, we all have that.
Yeah.
I think it depends on the level of the information you get. Because if you heard that, like, Tim Walls was abusive or something like that, like, that could change your view of the person, you know, like, oh, this is a person that was abusive to children or something. Like, I'm just using that as an example. But there are things that would make you think, oh, wow, maybe this isn't a person. So, I mean, I could be swayed with information as long as there was something to back it up and there was proof of it.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. Evidence. Exactly.
Like, yeah. All right. Well, I appreciate your thoughts on the matter. I thought this was kind of a fun piece about what's our business and what's not. And I don't think there's a right or wrong answer here. So we will see more of this, I'm sure. And inevitably, you will get this book surfaced to you on Amazon if you're an Amazon user, because obviously.
Well, and did you see now Amazon has come out and admitted that it was a glitch with their Alexa system yesterday, and they've now said they're fixing it. When you would ask Alexa to tell us about, you know, Donald Trump, we can't give you any information on whether or not you should vote for him. But what about Kamala Harris? Sure, we'll give you information about her and why she's
maybe
a pioneer, a gender
a glitch
pioneer.
In the programmer, but not a glitch in the programming.
Yes, you know, like exactly.
Exactly.
That person has been not fired, but promoted internally. So that's the same Amazon. Now they've apologized for it. Bezos, their Alexa team has apologized and they've fixed the glitch now.
Okay.
Cool. Now maybe if you can give me accurate weather information, that would be more I'd work on that. Spend instead of your political bias.
All right. That. Well, speaking of information, we have to talk about this CDC cover up. But guess where we cannot talk about it is one platform over another. If you're on one platform that rhymes with Shmoomoob, then we're not going to be there talking about that. If you're on another platform that rhymes with Bumble, but it's not Bumble. Isn't that a dating app?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we're not there.
Date redacted.
Yes. We're on a different one that rhymes with. Then come over there because we have to talk about that over in that platform. So those of you on Shmoomoob, we'll see you next week or join us. And thank you so much. And we will be live next week as well. We're back. It's no more holiday weekends.
So we're going to continue the stream right now on the other platform because, yes, we will be censored on the other one. So we're going to say goodbye to all of you guys who join us regularly here on YouTube. Thank you guys so much. But we are going to continue the stream because this is a very important story and it's unbelievable. So please come join us if you'd like. All right. So is everything done now on YouTube? Are we good? Is YouTube done?
We're clear there. We're paused
yep,
and done.
We're good.
Yep. We're good? Okay, good.
All right. Mario says, you can't name Rumble on YouTube. Well, actually, YouTube does have a terms of service that says if you direct people to another place where they think there is misinformation, then they could consider that a violation. So it's wild.
Like, isn't that amazing? So YouTube, like, literally tries to reach its hands across platforms. So if we say, hey, we're done here, guys, and then we're going to continue on Rumble and we tell you where to go, and then the story we do, they decide is misinformation. They literally could reach across and say, and then, you know, end our channel. And I mean, it's crazy.
The funny thing is they allow multi-streaming. They encourage their top streamers. Oh, yeah, multi-stream. Go to Twitch, go to Kick, go to these other places, but not the R one.
Mm. Right. Yeah, that's interesting.
All right, we're going to get to that story in a second. I just want to let all of them welcome in, guys, and subscribe to us here on Rumble. And I'm just going to wait for the audience to join us here. Almost getting close to 20,000 of you. That's great to see all of you guys joining us.
Belgian boy says, peekaboo. There they are.
Yeah.
I see you.
So any questions you guys have? You're clear, people. Yeah, you're clear. Screw tube. Good to see all of you guys. Welcome over. Welcome over. Okay. So we're going to get to that story in a second. The story is jaw-dropping, and it's infuriating. And this story needs to be shared far and wide. So please watch that. But first, we want to have a message here from our friends over at Zelenko and Dr. Zev. We're going to play this from Dr. Zev and tell you about Zelenko.
The only thing that these vaccines don't do is prevent COVID or prevent COVID's spread. They do a lot of other things. I challenge anyone who's listening not to believe a word I'm saying and do your own due diligence. I'll provide to you all the references for every word I'm saying, and you can come to your own conclusions. Really, what these injections do is really threefold. One, it is a weapon of population control, eugenics. Two, it is a way to enslave humanity through 24/7 surveillance. And three, it leads to the ability for genetic editing, splicing, manipulation to change the nature of what it means to be human.
So attention, patriots, you see what's happening out there. COVID, monkeypox, bird flu, the threats are constant. We're not getting the full story from those in power. But here's the truth. You don't have to sit back and rely on them to protect you. Dr. Vladimir Zelenko, the fearless physician who advised the Trump administration and saved countless lives with his at-home treatments, has created Z-Stack, the original all-natural at-home preventative vitamin for COVID, flu, and other viral illnesses. This isn't just another supplement. It's a powerhouse blend of multiple different vitamins, from zinc to vitamin C, vitamin D, specifically designed to fortify your immune system, keep you ready for anything. Imagine the confidence of knowing you're protected and prepared, taking your health into your own hands. This is about more than just vitamins. It's about freedom and taking back control. So don't wait for someone else to tell you what to do. Take action now. Go to ZStackLife.com. It's right there on the screen. ZStackLife.com. Grab your bottle of ZStack today. Use promo code REDACTED at checkout and save 20% off. Protect yourself, protect your family, and stay strong with ZStack. Well, our next guest has uncovered a massive cover-up at the CDC. Why is the CDC deleting vaccine deaths from its reporting data, effectively hiding how many Americans have died after taking the COVID-19 vaccines, whether it was Pfizer, Moderna, or otherwise? Additionally, our next guest says the CDC fraudulently overcounted the number of cases of COVID-19. Sounds like a lot of fraud going on over at the CDC. John Bodwin is the author, and he's an engineer, and he's the one who uncovered all of this. John, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for your work on this.
Thank you very much, Clayton. Appreciate being here.
So how did you first start in this? What was the first peel of the onion, and you noticed something really, really stunk here?
Oh, boy. I won't go into it too long, but I think about 5 days into the purported COVID pandemic, I downloaded some data from the CDC records from, I don't know, what CDC Wonder, I forget what it's called. And there are emails associated with each file. And the 2014 through 2018 data, I was looking at New York City at the time. I wrote to him and told him, there's something really wrong with your math here. It's not adding up among the influenza and pneumonia and then all respiratory columns. And when I wrote to the guy, he didn't return any email. What happened was the file was taken down. When they put it back up 36 hours later, a day and a half later, the data was changed. Not the method of calculation, but the data was changed. And I can't prove that. But you asked what got me into it. So that's what triggered me, to use a common word now, to dig into it. I then went to law school for a year. They kicked me out for not getting the vaccine. I sued the governor over the mask mandate. He changed the mandate for the entire state to get around my lawsuit. That was before I went to law school. And then I learned how to write the forms in law school. And then I sued the governor over the vaccine mandate and the law school for kicking me out. Then I got all the death records in Massachusetts for the last 8 years. And I determined that the causes of death shifted from 2020 being respiratory, that's the excess all cause. The amount more than normal by cause was respiratory in 2020. And all of a sudden in 21, when they started vaccinating, all of a sudden something changed and it was more excess circulatory in blood. So clotting, bleeding, stroke, gastrointestinal ischemia, hemorrhage, myocarditis, everybody talks about, that's only 1% of all COVID vaccine deaths. So although it's important and there's a large number of people getting myocarditis, there's far more dying from pulmonary embolism, acute post-hemorrhagic anemia, thrombocytopenia, and other things. So then I looked at individual deaths where it said they died accidentally. So you have accidental deaths. So I have blunt force trauma to the head, blunt force trauma to the torso, acute fentanyl intoxication. And they say in the setting of SARS-CoV-2 positivity, they tested dead bodies for COVID. And they got positive tests and they called them COVID. Now that may seem like, oh, well, it's terrible that they did that. No, that's federal felony fraud because these records are picked up by the CDC, a federal entity. And therefore, if you're saying it's a cause of death when it has no causal attribution to the death at all, the person died in a motorcycle accident, a car accident, a fentanyl overdose, didn't matter if they had COVID or not, that's fraud.
So we've been covering this on the show for a couple of years now, the idea that these numbers have been massively inflated, that if someone comes in from a car accident, they happen to have COVID. Yes, the blunt force trauma to the head is the thing that killed them in the car accident. But who is signing off to then label it as cause of death is COVID? Is it a doctor? Who's doing it? Or is the CDC later manipulating that data?
It's everything you said. I go through them individually pretty quickly. So a death certifier depends on the state. In Massachusetts, you have medical examiners who do full-time jobs where they do medical examinations of dead people, plus autopsies. So they certify deaths. Some of them do over 400 per year. That's more than one per workday, right? But you also have doctors attending at time of death. So the attending physician at time of death also is a death certifier. So it could be them. And then every once in a while, you have a nurse practitioner in Massachusetts. In Connecticut, instead of a nurse practitioner, they have what they call an advanced placement or advanced something, APRN, registered nurse, advanced practice registered nurse. So it depends on the state, but those are the ones who sign off. It's mostly medical examiners and doctors, and they're all told to do it, and they do it. And they're told by the hospital administrators because they were... the administrators were solicited, which is an inchoate crime, by the CARES Act, which has incentives to call something a COVID death. We all know this, but if you trace it back in law, you can go to the CARES Act and then a few other, it's a rat's nest of laws that call each other, and that's how they get paid. And so the hospital administrators then coerce the doctors and say, you're going to get fired if you don't do what I say. And the medical boards, such as the American Board of Internal Medicine, Family Medicine, Pediatrics, and all the other medical boards, tell the doctors, fall in line, do what you're told, or we're going to take your license or and your board certification.
Now, talk about the other side of this, which is how many have died after taking the COVID-19 vaccine. How is the CDC, what did you uncover looking at these death records and CDC data to realize that they were effectively changing the data to hide the number of vaccine deaths? I mean, are they trying to pawn it off on some other issue? Like this is, they're trying not to say that this was vaccine related. They're trying to pawn it off in some other way.
Yeah, there's a number of things that happen both at the state level and at the CDC. I'll cover the CDC first. So I work with a guy, Aaron Hartsburg, out of New York. We haven't done a lot in a while, but we used to share a lot of information. He wrote an article when I was busy with the Massachusetts. I said, you do the Minnesota. I don't have time right now because I was writing a book, which is over my shoulder here, The Real CDC. I said, you go ahead and do it. He wrote an article, and the title was something like, the CDC fraudulently omits vaccine as cause of death from death records. And then he had the individual examples from Minnesota. And those individual examples are death records that state, expressly state as a legal term, right? It's written vaccine or vaccination as a cause of death in the causes of death part of the death record. So 9 of them said vaccine. Only 3 of them were coded with Y59.0, which means viral vaccines, okay? Death from viral vaccines. And if you say 3 are coded, 6 are not, and you understand that the CDC uses a software program, too, called TransAct. The other one is called Acme. And you can look up the manuals for those software programs online under the CDC. Those programs read the English words that are written on the death record. So if it says vaccination or vaccine, it under, as a cause of death, it will use the code Y59.0. That's an automatic system. So either it coded none of them and somebody manually coded the three in Minnesota and then they purposely didn't code the next six, or the software correctly identified and put out Y59.0 on the three and then somebody deleted the next six. Either way is an intentional act to hide them. Now, what they didn't know, Greg Piper from Just the News, these are, so paragraphs 49, 50, and 51 in my second publication, the CDC memorandum that was served to the CDC, FDA, and NIH, and 13 of their deputy directors. Those paragraphs show the email interaction between Greg Piper from Just the News. And Greg Piper asked the CDC, here's a link to the Aaron Hertzberg's article in the Brownstone that was seen by millions of people. What do you have a comment on that? And the response from Kristen Nordland from the CDC was that, what did she say? The article is incorrect. The ones in question say vaccination, not vaccine. And a vaccination is not a vaccine or cause of death, so we didn't code for it. In other words, she tailored her excuse. But you look confused, and you should be, because there's no difference between vaccine and vaccination. She tried to make that distinction as an excuse as to why they didn't do it. What she didn't know is that we also had the Massachusetts records. And Solomon Kizito died January 16, 2021. It said vaccination, not vaccine. So it blew her excuse out of the water. And the next nine, by the way, in Massachusetts are not coded. Some people died within five. One guy was 5 minutes. People died within a day or two of pulmonary embolism. All kinds of clotting, bleeding, strokes. I have a woman with a stroke who, you know, reacted in hours, died in a couple of weeks, because you do the life support thing and then you pull the plug and the official date of death is a couple of weeks later. Her record says acute intracranial hemorrhage in the setting of thrombocytopenia in a person recently vaccinated. They said it. That's a cause of death. It's in the causes of death. They didn't code it with Y59.0. And then 2 weeks after she died, Brianna McCarthy was injected. And she was a high school teacher in Methuen, Massachusetts. She was 30 years old, an English teacher. Her death record says COVID, by the way. It took 3 years for her father bothering the Department of Vital Records to add vaccine as a cause of death. And here's what happened. She reacted in hours with a terrible headache, went to the ER twice. They told her to go home because the ER is for COVID patients. And you shouldn't come to the ER for a headache. The third time they brought her in, her family brought her in because she didn't recognize her sister. She was having a full-blown stroke. And she had a seizure, paralysis, and she was dead within a few days. And for the last 3 years, it only said that she died from COVID. In fact, this case is so documented that six doctors from Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, Harvard Medical College, wrote a report about it in the Neurohospitalist Journal. It's a medical journal. And the title is Fatal Post-COVID mRNA Vaccine-Associated Cerebral Ischemia. That title means the vaccine killed her by stroke. And in every paragraph, it says the vaccine killed her by stroke. And it says there are several reports, a number of reports, where thrombocytopenia is frequent. And I just told you, Diane Dubois, 2 weeks before Brianna got injected, died from thrombocytopenia after the vaccine. So they knew this. And we're talking, so Diane was March and Brianna was April of 2021. We're talking weeks into the vaccine. They knew this, and yet they hid it, and they wrote COVID. And by the way, there was a positive test on file where she had no symptoms. The positive test was 4 months earlier. So they said she died from COVID from a 4 month earlier positive test, whereas she reacted to the vaccine in hours, and they omitted that from her death record for 3 years. That's in chapter two of my book. And then, of course, 5 weeks after Brianna died, Eden was 17 years old. She reacted right away with a headache, went to the doctor twice. She didn't go to the ER like Brianna. She went to her doctor. But the headache cleared up. And after the headache cleared up, she got her second shot. She died from a hemorrhagic stroke at 17 years old. I have a bunch of these. This is the level of evidence I have in my publications. It's irrefutable. It does not require research papers and confidence intervals and p-values. These people are dead. The vaccine killed them. And the CDC has been hiding it. And by the way, I now have the Connecticut data. The first one is coded with Y59.0, the next three are not. And like I said, in Massachusetts, the first one is coded, the next nine are not. And in Minnesota, three are coded, six are not. So they're either deleting them or hiding them from the American people. And although the numbers seem low, this is only a small percentage of documentation that can be found. So thousands of people died, and I proved this through data as well. So I go through acute post-hemorrhagic anemia, pulmonary embolism, and I show every one of those graphs where what is going up, what is going down. And the vaccine killed thousands of people in every state. If any state lets me into their vaccine immunization registry, and I'll correlate that with the death records and Medicare, Medicaid, it's over. They're hiding it all from us. We're talking one man week, Clayton. In one man week, I could solve this all if they were to just be transparent, but they're hiding everything.
Are you able to get these through Freedom of Information Act requests? If yes, could you solve this? If no, then have you been denied?
Yeah, you can't get the immunization records. They won't give them out to anybody. There is one group. There's one group in Atlanta or somewhere in Georgia, I just assumed Atlanta, that got immunization records. All they did was correlate it with the strokes database to say, oh, we don't find any higher rates of stroke based on this. It obviously, somebody got it, and they had a very narrow lane. They didn't want to go outside the lane to determine what was going on. I think it was a government setup.
Two questions here, and I'll get you out of here, John. Who do you think is responsible for this cover-up? Is it one individual? Is it a group of individuals? And how high do you think that it goes? And the other question is, how many people, do you have a sense, based on the data, how many people do you believe have died in the United States from the vaccine?
Okay, a couple of questions. So I'm mostly a systems engineer, root cause analyst type guy. And I've been educated in very many purviews. I'm not an expert in any one thing. So who's doing this? There's that whole cabal, I call them the Western oligarchical powers, who control a lot of our politicians. The politicians have no idea what they're doing. They put the CARES Act through because they were told to by the lobbyists who paid for their trips to wherever. Or who hold information about their, you know, illicit actions outside their marriages or with children or whatever they do. Whatever they're doing, they pass the bill. Now, the bill was created, the CARES Act and the PREP Act and others. The CARES Act itself is a behavior modification device. It has nothing to do with compensating states for all the expenditures they'll have to put out for the pandemic, the purported pandemic, which I think about 90% of COVID deaths are fraudulent. It would take a long time to go through that analysis. But it's between 80 and 90% are fraudulent. They didn't die from COVID. So look what they did. Half a million, and you want a number. So I'll give you 500,000 people in the United States died from the vaccine. Another 500,000 died from NIH COVID treatment protocols, including everybody talks about remdesivir. But nobody knows it's remdesivir because they won't do the study. And again, it would take one man week to look through hospital records, to look at the vital signs, which are taken every hour when somebody's in the hospital, blood labs every day, medications that are given, they have them written down, charted to the minute. And through such an investigation, they could find out when the creatinine levels changed, when the liver enzymes changed, and figure out, was it remdesivir or was it a combination of remdesivir and vancomycin or baricitinib? Or any of the other cocktails they give with midazolam, lorazepam, dexmedetomidine, propofol, and fentanyl. All these combined to kill 500,000 people. And I call it murder because although the hospitals don't know that they're murdering people, some of them really don't know, and they think they're helping somebody with a COVID protocol. Whoever put the protocol together knows that it has nothing to do with saving somebody from COVID. Nothing. It was put together for a different reason. Was it murder? Was it trying to reduce the population? I don't know. And, you know, maybe we'll never know. And people can go around saying that, and it just says it makes us sound like conspiracy theorists. What is a fact is that they have killed them. Like I showed with acute renal failure, 155,000 excess in acute renal failure alone. And if you look at the number of life years lost because those people were a lot younger, it's more than COVID, more than smallpox, more than H1N1, more than polio, Hong Kong flu, or anything in the last 100 years except for World War II. We have the greatest loss of life years in the last 4 years from acute renal failure alone. That's sudden acute kidney injury or sudden kidney failure. It all means the same thing. That's the biggest loss of life. And I'm the only one besides Ed Dowd and Finance Technologies who are talking about it. It's ridiculous. We have a Center for Disease Control. I mean, what do? They create diseases. And then they're not doing their job. I'm one guy. They have 250,000 employees across all state and federal public health agencies, and I've done more.
500,000 people killed, and it's covered up and hidden. It's remarkable. And you're right about that. It's what is the purpose? Is it population control? Is it some other reason? Is it all about control? We may never know. We may never know. But your point is well taken. It happened. These people are dead. Yes. And they knew about it. They knew about it. They covered it up. And by the way, how early do you think that they knew that this was happening and still kept it going? That to me is the worst offense, right? They knew that this is killing people. They know that in these initial days of the rollout, it's killing people, and they're hiding it. And other people are going and marching to their deaths.
I had a video out. I knew in February of 2021, and I had a video out by April of 21, which I had to do for torts class in law school. It's a 10-minute video. And coincidentally, well, the professor said, can you do it on economics and torts? Because nobody else understands economics. I was like the old guy in the class, right? And the others weren't astute in economics. So I did it. I did it on the hand formula and the importance of tort law. And I go through the least cost avoider, most cost avoider, the burden of precautions. And if you, let me break it down to 10 seconds. When you give liability through the PREP Act to the manufacturers, they shirk their responsibility to make the product safe. That's called the burden of precautions. And they transfer that burden to the people, but it doesn't manifest in money, which would be trials for the manufacturer. It manifests in loss of life and maim in the people. And there's that 10-minute video, you can just type in the hand formula, tort law, or something like that, and it should come up. And I explain it. And now in that video at the end, I did it on VAERS. I did it on the PREP Act and the number of deaths. And I right there in April of 21, it should have been over. Long time. A lot of deaths. That's been a life.
And they're still promoting it. What's unbelievable to me, they're still promoting it. I have to admit something here, John. I was on the phone with you a few weeks ago, and you and I were talking. And this is unbelievable. I know this. My hand to the heavens, this is true. I'm in a doctor's office or in a lab to have blood drawn for just a test, totally unrelated to COVID in any kind of way. But I was just there to do a blood test, and so was my wife. We were sitting in the lobby waiting, and a woman came in. She was there to get a COVID shot. She had like signed up to go to one of these things to get a COVID shot. She's sitting there. She's an older woman. She was clearly in her like mid-60s or maybe early 70s. She's sitting there, and I'm on the phone with you having this conversation about, and I'm confirming your data, confirming what you found in the Massachusetts data, how they're covering up these direct deaths as a result of COVID vaccines. And I'm confirming it with you, not trying to get her to pay attention to me at all. And I was trying to be as quiet as I could. She overheard our conversation. She got up, canceled her appointment, and walked out of that office. So I'm just saying that as an anecdote, but she overheard what we were talking about, verifiable data from the CDC that they're covering up deaths from these vaccines. She gets them and walks out. If other Americans knew about this, how many lives could have been saved because of your work in getting this message out? It really makes me angry. I mean, it gives me chills thinking about it, to be honest with you.
Well, we have, so again, I get to root causes. I'm doing an amicus brief right now for a case that I hope will get to the Supreme Court that a friend who is also a lawyer is putting forward. And that amicus brief will deal with the root cause of why our system's broken. And that is the what I call dismissal doctrines, one of which is qualified immunity. Another is standing doctrine. Cases have not been heard. They should have been heard at the beginning of COVID. All of this should have been solved on a constitutional basis long ago, but they dismiss the cases, so they're not heard on a substantive basis. And this, to give you an example, Ashcroft versus Iqbal was a 2009 case that says the complaint has to be plausible on its face. Now, that's a very subjective. There's no objectivity in that. A judge can throw anything out anytime he wants, basically. He can violate your most foundational right of right to petition the government for redress of grievances. What happens is civil society breaks down when you don't have access to the courts. If you can't have a controversy or case heard in the courts, the neighbors are going to go at it in the street.
Right.
And that's where we are with a lot of things, because we can't get anything solved in the courts due to this particular court. And when I say that, I mean John Roberts, Chief Justice Court, since I think he's been there since 2005. And the case is Ashcroft versus Iqbal, 2009. It's been cited 268,000 times in the last 15 years. And every one of those is a motion to dismiss based on standing, Rule 12b-6. And there's three ways to change it. I won't get into it now. I'm talking to a couple of state legislators to try to codify that. But that once we get access to the courts again, we can solve these issues, how they're supposed to be solved in a court, that the court's been rejecting them. And so we now have a million people dead because they wouldn't hear the cases due to that. That is the root cause. It's Ashcroft versus Iqbal. I can do criminal, and then I could talk about economic and the intersection of law and economics. It's not as complicated as people think, but when you look at a law expert, he doesn't understand economics. When you look at a doctor, you know, medicine expert, he doesn't understand that these are all behavior modifications and everybody was coerced, threatened, or solicited for the downstream behavior that flows from the words written in the laws. And I understand them because I was in sales for 30 years, because I've been highly trained and educated and $40,000 of training in how to manipulate people, basically. And when you come to compensation plans, we used to say the pay plan defines the behavior. And if the corporation puts together a pay plan and there's a loophole where the loophole hurts the corporation but helps the sales guy is going to take the money every day and hurt the corporation. And so the CARES Act being what it is, it hurts the people. And the doctors are getting compensated, or at least not getting fired, and the hospitals are getting compensated, and they just keep doing it.
Where can people read your book? What's the name of your book that you can dive more deeply into all of these subjects that John's talking about?
So the book is called The Real CDC. Over my head here, over here, is Coquin de Chien. It means bad dog in French. I'm moving away from that title. And the CDC, you see the lowercase d up there? You'll see a lowercase d on the book. So therealcdc.com, very simple, therealcdc.com. The first book subtitle is called COVID Facts for Regular People. I wrote it for regular people to understand. It's not all about statistics. It goes into the seven-year-old they said died from COVID, where she reacted in 5 minutes, threw up for 8 to 10 hours, and she died in 5 days. And the only thing it says in part one of her death record is, she died from COVID, so all the parents lined up their kids to get the shot. And the school principal and the town mayor and everybody in that town didn't say a word. They didn't say what she really died from, and they know damn well what she died from. So I go from there. And then another website is Summa Logica LLC. I put my press releases out there. The most recent thing I've done, I have to actually post it on my website, SUMMALOGICA, Summa Logica LLC.com. The most recent is the Connecticut Memoranda Series, Volume 2. Volume 1 was the acute kidney injury for the Connecticut data. Volume 2 is vaccine deaths, where I list 100 vaccine deaths in 250 pages. 171 enumerated paragraphs are in there with people's names, whether they're kids or not. I'm over it. I'm not holding back. You know, you can't say, well, this person deserves privacy in death. It's like, yeah, but we're killing another 100,000 people per year with these fake vaccines. Right, they deserve to live. These other kids deserve to live. I'm sorry that you lost a kid. I lost a kid in 2018, my oldest boy. And can you tell I'm mad and I'm upset? They're killing kids. You know, sorry.
No, thank you for the incredible work, John. And I feel your frustration. And you know, we try to get to the heart of how my father died after taking one of these vaccines and ended up with a stroke and, you know, not allowed to go to the hospital to see him. And his official cause of death was stroke. Nothing to do with the vaccines, of course. So clearly part of this. John, great to see you. Thank you so much for the incredible work on this. And we'll have it linked up in the description where people can find your additional work. Don't be a stranger. We'd love to have you back on as you peel this onion even further. Thanks, John.
Thank you, Clayton. Have a good one.
Thanks, John. And it's just mind-blowing that there's not more outrage on this issue. And I see television ads, you know, during different sporting events, come get your COVID shot. Don't let the fall get the best of you during this, you know, this autumn period with COVID. Come get your COVID-19 shot right now. They're still pushing this in a big, big way. How many more people are going to die as a result of this? Deeply, deeply disturbing. Well, we're going to leave it there. And I want thanks to all of you for subscribing to us here on Rumble. This is a free speech platform. We can do this segment here on Rumble. Of course, we can't do it on YouTube. They still want to get the message out that go get those COVID shots, you know, deeply disturbing. So thank you guys so much for being a part of our show here. We really appreciate it. Thank you for your support here on this free speech platform. And we will be back streaming live tomorrow, 4 p.m. Eastern time. Here on Rumble, and of course on YouTube and on X as well. So have a great night, everyone.
Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com.